Good morning.
So encouraging and so uplifting to see the good number that we have in the house of the Lord today. I'm going to talk today about two words. Just two words. Easy to say, hard to do. We've heard these words many times as we've come to church services. We've used them ourselves as a confidant or counselor to others. They are simply, trust God. Trust God. Two single syllable words that you have heard forever. But as we discover in the passing of time how difficult they are to obey, trust God. One night, a house caught fire and a young boy was forced to flee to the roof. The father stood on the ground below with outstretched arms, calling out to his son, "Jump! I'll catch you!" He knew that the boy had to jump to save his life, but all the boy could see was just the shooting flames, the thick smoke and blackness. As could be imagined, he was afraid to leave that roof. His father kept yelling, "Still, jump! I will catch you!" But the boy protested, "Daddy, I can't see you!" The father replied, "But I can see you, and that's all that matters." And is not that the wonder to keep in mind? We cannot see God, but He can see us, each and every one of us, and that is all that matters. Of course, I have no way of knowing what exactly the future holds for you. One might lose their home and everything that they own in a fire. One might lose their job, or their wealth, their health. One might lose their spouse to an early disease, detected but not cured. One might lose a measure of their dreams or hopes, perhaps a relationship that they have cultivated over the years. All loss is painful, and one is going to be brought over and over and over again to the familiar words of Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. I know, that you can recite this. Many of you have memorized these words in Bible classes or under the tutelage of parents at home, growing up at the knee of godly fathers and godly mothers. And your lips will move as I quote them. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Or as it is phrased there in the New International Version, in all your ways, submit to Him, and He will make your paths straight. All your heart, all your ways, trust. Now we have a bone to pick with this, don't we? Because first of all, we are too self-sufficient, self-sustaining, competent, and confident. We are all so suave and savvy to get out of a jam without owning up to how God can orchestrate or at least permit jams to invade our lives so as to teach us. And by not trusting in Him, we pay a steep price, costly, and go our own way. We are too self-reliant. Another reason we fail this test is that we are too quick to fall back on others. All of us will have friends who can be very capable. As life unfolds in our realm of responsibility, we meet those who are going to be smarter than us, richer than us, more resourceful, better connected than we are, better educated. And some may become good friends, and they can become a crutch. Yet even the arm of flesh can fail us. Even amongst fellow preachers, antics can exist, tomfoolery. There were two preachers of yesteryear, Mr. Harold Hockingay and Mr. Donald Barnhouse. They were friends. Hockingay was over there in Boston, Barnhouse there in Philadelphia. And they decided that they would preach on one occasion a round-robin series of meetings together for 30 days. That month of time would be spent from Boston all the way down to Pittsburgh. One would go first the first night and the other would go second. The following night, the one who was second would go first. And so it went back and forth. So they began the cycle from one congregation to another on a circuit. And Barnhouse learned quickly that Hockengay would preach the very same sermon night after night. Barnhouse brought a different message every night, 29 nights. But he figured early on that the last night he would come first, so he memorized Hockengay's sermon, listened to it night after night, got it down, introduction, illustrations, transitions, points, conclusion, he nailed it. So when it came time for the final night, Barnhouse stood first to preach, and he delivered Hockengay's sermon, word perfect. Hockengay sat up front, arms folded, without changing his expression one bit. Didn't look surprised, didn't shake his head, just sat there and heard it all. Now Barnhouse was having the time of his life, knowing that the man was struggling to know what he would do when he stood up. His turn came, and Hockengay stood and delivered a completely different message than he had on the previous nights of their conference. Barnhouse was blown away. As the lights dimmed and everyone had left, the two men were walking down the middle. Barnhouse leaned over and said, "They kind of liked your sermon I preached tonight, didn't they?" Hockengay said with a twinkle, "Not nearly as much as they enjoyed it when I preached it here 2 months ago." The cynic may say, given an opportunity, one might try to do you wrong every time. Friends can try to spite us or play tricks. The story was told about Tonto and the Lone Ranger riding through a canyon together when all of a sudden both sides were filled with Native American warriors on horses dressed for battle. The Lone Ranger turned to Tonto and asked, "What are we going to do, Tonto?" Tonto replied, "What do you mean, we, white men?" I guess he was really the Lone Ranger at that point. So we can be let down by friends. Yet we know, Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. Or Ecclesiastes 4:9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. And of course, there's that well-known punchline of Jimmy Stewart there. It's a Wonderful Life, that no man is a failure who has friends. They warm our hearts. And so we think that when we're up against it all, they're going to get us through it. That's why we sometimes fail to trust God, and we can end up paying a penalty. Another reason we don't trust is because we feel distant from the God of heaven. Don't feel too guilty about that. So did Job, that old patriarch. Yet Job said in the bowels of his soul, in the chaos of all of that great loss, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." Job 13:15. "Though he take me off this earth, in the process I leave, I depart, trusting him." And a fourth reason I will name is that we have cultivated the bad habit of worry. Many of us are much better at worrying than we are at trusting. If we put together a worry list, it would outrun our prayer list. And you're worried right now about something. Could be relationships or about failings in your life, regrets, do-overs that are just completely impossible now. They're not forthcoming. Or it might be finances. You don't have enough money. I'm going to give you a word of encouragement right here. You will never have enough money. And you're worried over it and don't trust God. So you see how practical this is. There are those who will forego church services. They're not going to attend because they affirm God doesn't pay my bills, but my work shall. So they are racked with worry over debts they have to meet. And if you think that you're going to outgrow the problem of worry, you won't. People can often learn to just fake it. We will never so conquer worry so as to presume it will never raise its ominous, portentous head again against us. For it's part of the flesh. And friends, we are in the flesh, last we checked. We want it gone for good. But the only way we can really get there is to learn from it. And that is to learn to trust. To learn to trust, deliberately shoving it all away and saying, God, at this moment, I rest in you and in you alone. If you are married, say, God, help my spouse and me to trust in you, to lean upon you, to wait on you, to listen to you as we pore over your holy word together. Let us trust in you. To endure the hardships together with you. You see, because if you're waiting for your spouse alone to be your all in all, that is never going to happen. Now, yes, there are definite benefits to a godly, wholesome marital relationship and friendship that's there. I like the Swedish proverb about it. Friendship doubles our joy and divides our grief. Or put another way, shared joy is double joy. Shared sorrow is half a sorrow. Yet we are still two very different human beings, and we're going to puzzle each other and frustrate each other from time to time. I plead guilty to having once watched Louisa May Alcott's Little Women, the one with Winona Ryder, who played Jo March, and Christian Bale, who starred as Laurie Theodore, and Eric Stoltz as John Brooke. John Brooke is a tutor for young Laurie here. They are next door neighbors to the March sisters. And one day, Lori and Mr. Brooke are in their house, and Lori is just restlessly musing. What do those girls do all day over there? And Brooke answers back, over the mysteries of female life is drawn a veil, best left undisturbed. Now that can work both ways, right? But men might naturally want to try to fix things, and sometimes you're wife, your partner here, is not really going to want that. She just wants a listening ear. But because of our differences, there can be a disconnect, leading us to say with Asaph there in Psalm 73, verse 25, whom have I in heaven but you? And there is none upon earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Now listen closely. When we choose to fix what is impossible, we do not trust. When we hurry ahead and do not wait for the Lord to change it, we do not trust. When we constantly lie awake at night, twisting and turning, we do not trust. When we doubt biblical promises and principles, we do not trust. When we turn to others first to get a bit of a bailout, we do not trust. When we listen to human psychology and give a higher priority to that than the wisdom of the infinite Almighty, we do not trust. When we cling to others in order to feel needed and secure and loved, we do not trust yet as we ought to. How easy it is to disobey. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Psalm 143, verse 8. Cause me to hear your loving kindness in the morning, for in you do I trust. Cause me to know the way in which I should walk, for I lift up my soul to you. In Ryan Holiday's The Daily Stoic, I found this observation, commenting on a quote by Epictetus, a Greek philosopher. Now, Epictetus said, when I see an anxious person, I ask myself, what do they want? For if a person wasn't wanting something outside of their own control, why would they be stricken by anxiety? And Holiday then comments, the anxious father, worried about his children, what does he want? A world that is always safe. A frenzied traveler, what does she want? For the weather to hold and for traffic to part so that she can make her flight. A nervous investor, that the market will turn around and an investment will pay off. All of those scenarios hold the same thing in common. As Epictetus says, it's wanting something outside our control. Getting worked up, getting excited, and nervously pacing, these intense moments show us at our most futile and servile. Staring at the clock, at the ticker, at the next checkout lane over, at the sky, it's as if we all belong to a religious cult that believes the gods of fate will only give us what we want if we sacrifice our peace of mind. He continues, today, when you find yourself getting anxious, ask yourself, why are my insides twisted into knots? Am I in control here or my anxiety? And most important, is my anxiety doing me any good? How very true those thoughts and reflections are. In Numbers chapter 11, God was very much distraught and wroth with his people for their lack of trust. The record reveals to us there in Numbers chapter 11, verse 4. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. And dear ones, by the time we get there to the 21st chapter, they're going to call this worthless bread. That's all the manna is. It's just pointless to us, repugnant. They were questioning God's ability to take care of them. Not directly charging, but indirectly. Who? The Lord of hosts is his name. Shall not he who parted the Red Sea take care of you and take care of me? If God brings us to it, he shall bring us through it. So it should have been there with them in that vast desert and barren land in the wilderness of Paran. But what was the problem? They did not trust. And it became their very undoing. There was a sharp fine to be exacted. I heard one put it like this. Unbelief puts our circumstances between us and God. But faith puts God between us and our circumstances. I like that. We have to allow God to make the plan, rather than trying so hard and painstakingly to create the plan ourselves. God is going to do a much better job. The folklore is told of a man who lost his horse. It ran away. And when the horse ran away, the neighbor came and said to him, you know what? Bad luck, isn't it? Your horse is gone. He said, what do I know about these things? A few days later, the horse came back with 20 other wild horses. The neighbor came and said, amazing, isn't it? It's not bad luck. This is good luck. You've got 20 more horses than you had before. The man said, what do I know about these things? His young son goes and tames one of the new horses. And the horse gets nervous and kicks him and breaks his leg severely. The neighbor comes and says, terrible, isn't it? Your son's leg is broken. Bad luck that all these horses came along. The fellow said, what do I know about good luck and bad luck? A few days go by and a bunch of thugs come over the hillside looking for recruits to join their gang. And they are looking for all the able-bodied young men. They are about to pick that young man up, but they find out his leg is broken and they say, we don't want him. We're going to move over to the next house. So the man comes and says, good luck, wasn't it? Your son's leg was broken. In one little series of episodes, we don't know what lies ahead. Why don't you wait till you stand before God face to face and you will find out that there were reasons he allowed hardship and adversity to come your way into your life here in this broken world. It's the story of Joseph, friends. In prison, he left it all with God. He did not mope. He worked hard for God and left results with the Almighty. And while the brothers meant that enslavement for evil, God meant it for good. It's a spirit of the Apostle Paul, for whether by life or by death, I shall glorify God. For me to live is Christ and to die is gain. Philippians chapter 1, verse 21. What do we know about things that befall us here? I do not matter. We do not matter. It's God's plan that counts, and he knows what he is doing here. preacher spoke about a couple in his congregation who had come to see him. She was in her late 30s and he was about the same age. She was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She lost all her hair with the treatments. They have 2 small children. Here sat the husband. Here sat this lovely woman, his wife. And they spoke in an uplifting manner. The preacher himself was in tears. They were smiling. The preacher thought, what an interesting reversal of roles. I'm supposed to be the one who has all the answers, right? And they sat and ministered to him and spoke of what they felt that God was doing in their lives and what they were being taught. And while one can be cynical, deep down we say, that's exactly where we want to be in our frame of mind when the doctor says, it's your wife, or it's your husband, or your mom, or your dad, or you. He asked the husband, don't you lay awake at night wondering where all this is going? His response was immediate. Oh yeah, there are nights just like that. Then tears came when he said, I can't imagine living without the greatest woman on earth. Real life stuff. The preacher embraced them both. And the husband opened up to say, to be honest with you, my greatest fear is knowing that these children would be raised just by me. But without their good mother, I can't imagine how I'm going to be able to do that. But I, and these are his exact words, but I trust God. That's what I'm talking about. And being in ministry will certainly not make one immune to tests like this. It will not inoculate us. So, what do you do if it's you? 1 Samuel chapter 30, real quick. 1 Samuel chapter 30. The man in question is David. He just left the ranks of the Philistines. He's in the rear ranks with Achish, who tells him that the Philistines don't really like having you around. You need to go back. The Philistines granted them Ziklag, where they could live. And they have about a 3.5 day walk back to Ziklag. Unsure what the future would exactly be, hunted, haunted, hounded, harried by King Saul. So they come to what was their home. Verse 1, 1 Samuel chapter 30. Don't you just love these first words? Now it happened. In other words, out of the blue, unexpectedly, the shock of what they were to see was just over the hill here. When David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, attacked Ziklag, and burned it with fire. Now, friends, that is bad enough because that meant all of their homes were gone, devoured there within that inferno. But look there at verse 2. They had taken captive the women and those who were there, from small to great. So that would mean the children as well. They did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. Now, let me pause to point out, they did not see bodies lying there, but that didn't mean that they wouldn't have been taken off and killed somewhere else. That could well have been a possibility. You can imagine all the questions entering into their minds. All they knew, it was vacant. It was smoldering ruins. The tents were roasted. You could hear the wind whistle, perhaps, through the charred branches of the bushes. Verse 3. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. And their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David, verse 4, and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept, until they had no more power to weep. Now, before you think that David is living in denial, let those words run through you. David himself is weeping. Never think that trusting God means you do not weep. Please learn not to say to people who lost someone near and dear to them, "Let's not cry. We're trusting God after all." We don't weep as those who have no hope. But indeed, we can weep. If the loss cuts you deeply, you can't help but experience tears. Verse 5, his wives were taken. Verse 6, now David was greatly distressed. And I hope I'm not going too far with this, but you have the Hebrew yatsar, which in some contexts can mean depressed even. The man slumps into a time of melancholy and gloom. And if that wasn't enough, the people spoke of stoning him. These are his own troops, his own staff, the foot soldiers, men that he'd helped to train. If all are there, you've got 600 from the cave of Adullam. Why didn't you think ahead, David? You're the commander-in-chief. You're the leader here. And make no mistake, we're going to go through that too. You live life long enough. You try to help others out. It'll happen. You can be the scapegoat. They looked at David and turned to him and turned on him nearly. Mutiny, almost. Then we read the best part of the story in the latter half of verse 6. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. How good is that? Where can I go? Oh, where can I go? Seeking a refuge for my soul, needing a friend to save me in the end. Oh, where can I go but to who? But to the Lord. How'd he do it? Well, you know, and I know. It's just hard to do it. I lost my wife, my kids. I'm losing their trust. Maybe he remembered a song he wrote. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I'm going to close out with this. A preacher had his daughter diagnosed with a very difficult eye problem. Her eye, when she was born, it wandered. It moved in and out. And as she got to school, she wore thick glasses, especially there over the bad eye. And of course, the kids were making fun of her, teasing her. She felt insecure, quite helpless, miserable, and she would come home crying. And he and his wife talked, and they decided to try to do something. So he said, "I do know of an ophthalmologist, and maybe he can help." Well, the doctor said, "First of all, this is a child's eye that we're dealing with here, and so I'm working in a very confined area. You need to know that there are muscles that hold the eye, and I'll have to guess as to how much to stretch." And he talked there in the gobbledygook that doctors will talk in, and he said, "But you need to know it is a guess." Well, this preacher thought to himself, "With all the money that I'm paying you, friend, you better guess right, pal." Now, he thought that. He didn't say that. The doctor said, "Please don't worry when she comes out of all of this here, because all may not be as you expect, but I anticipate a full fusion ultimately." And so it was done, and here the preacher comes on in, the father comes on in. "Open your eye, honey." She's coming out of anesthesia. She does peek that eye open, and the pupil is looking directly at the bridge of her nose. Almost all white. The preacher confessed that something happened inside that he was almost ashamed to admit. He thought, "Well, fine. That's just great. Thanks, God. I prayed to you about this." He left. The wife said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I don't know." He left in his car, sped away. Got to the building office, locked the front door, put up a sign that said, "Do not disturb," and he sat there in the dark. He heard a knock there at the door. He didn't want to answer. It was his friend who had heard about all of this. He said, "What? Oh, you're there." And he opened the door and said, "I don't want to talk to you." Well, the reply was, "Well, I'd like to talk to you." The preacher said, "Well, I don't want to have to listen to anything that you got to say. Well, let's go for a walk." Well, this visiting friend here had teamed up with an artist to draw something for the preacher. And so, as the preacher and this friend left, the friend made sure that that door was unlocked so that one could get in there, but he didn't let the preacher see that. So there they were at the park, sitting on a bench, and the preacher was crying like a baby. The friend sought to reassure him, "You know, it's all still very early. A lot can still happen. It's not the end." He said, "I know all that. I can finish every sentence that you start." In the meantime, the artist associate is in the office drawing a big poster. So the preacher finished with the friend, and he got back there to the office, and he turned the light on. And there was this big poster. It was a big picture of a monk, robe, funny haircut, toes in sandals, and at the bottom, "Did we in our own strength confide, our striving would be losing. We're not the right man on our side, the man of God's own choosing. Dost ask who this might be? Christ Jesus, it is He. Lord Sabbath His name, from age to age the same, and He must win the battle." And the preacher sobbed like he'd never cried in his adult life when he realized how unbelieving he had been. "He will win the battle. He will win it. It'll be His battle, and we will simply enjoy the spoils of the victory." Now, he thanked that artist for drawing that. Several weeks later, his daughter was home. And from that day on, straight on fusion with the eyes. Ideal ending for their hopes. Yet even if that had not been the specific result, they'd still trust in God's sovereign purposes. The Lord teaches even those who might have shameful responses, that He will win the battle. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take Him at His word, just to rest upon His promise, just to know, "Thus saith the Lord." Trust God. Say that. Say that in your heart. Trust God. And yet the Lord said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things that I say?" Our trust is manifested. It's always going to be in our obedience to the gospel and the tenets and the instruction of the Lord Jesus Christ. So trust and obey, because there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Our soul, friends, our life is at stake. His gospel is very clear and it is very plain. And it's found abundantly within the pages of the Bible for honest seekers to find. Psalm 32, verse 10. "Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, mercy shall surround him." Psalm 34, verse 8. "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in Him." John in the book of Revelation was told to write it all down. Write, for these words are faithful and true. They are trustworthy. "He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son." Do we want to be there with the Heavenly Father? Then we're going to have to take that leap, as it were. Get over the fears of the flames and leap into the loving arms of our Father who art in heaven. Let's obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." Mark chapter 16, verse 16. Can we help you toward this end? Have a renewed faith
Walk with the Lord. He will lead you home.
If we can help at this time, please come down the front while together we stand now and sing.